Welcome to another edition of The Brand Called You. I've brought you some amazing people, and today I have a very, very accomplished entrepreneur, Viraj Kalra, with me. Viraj, welcome to the show.
Ashutosh, thank you so much for having me over. It's an absolute pleasure and an honor to be here.
Thank you. Viraj is from the Darden School of Business. He's also been to IMD Lausanne, and he's a soft and behavioral skill trainer. So Viraj, tell me a little bit about your early work and some of your learnings.
So Ashutosh, it's very interesting that I am everything by chance. Mm-hmm. Entrepreneur by chance, trainer by chance. Uh-huh. And if you were to ask my batchmates from back in school, and there have been many schools, by the way, or for that matter, even during my time at Delhi University, doing my graduation, all of those batchmates of mine, if you would ever meet them, they would say, would have never thought that this is the path that, Viraj would walk.
Yeah.
I think I was below average to average academically all through, and nothing to write home about as far as sports and extracurricular was concerned as well.
Right.
So life was just chugging along with, middle class values and parents reminding you that you have to do whatever you have to do completely on your own. And every time that thought occurred to me, it was, literally ke sara sara.
Mm-hmm.
It was kaat pe diem, dekha jayega, ho jayega.
Correct.
But so that's the early part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for me, the big shift happened when towards the end of my second year graduation, I realized that if I have to continue my fancy South Delhi lifestyle, it's not going to happen with my father's Ministry of Mines salary, and that I need to figure this out on my own.
Mm-hmm.
So I started working, and fortunate for me, I got my first opportunity to work with a company called Perfect Relations.
Yeah.
It's a PR and an image consulting advisory. Dilip and Bobby, if those are the mentors you get in your first job, you cannot go wrong. And that's exactly what happened to me. I realized my calling. I realized my strengths. I also realized my shortcomings. And I just got fantastic exposure thanks to them. I think they were mentally and culturally in the startup mode plenty before startup as a term even occurred to India.
Yes,
right? So I think that bit of being entrepreneurial, that spark of being entrepreneurial got lit right there and then. When I saw them doing things which were spectacular, I mean, they were working with some of the biggest corporate, but on shoestring budgets. They were working on some of the most strategic communication-based accounts, but out of five different basements in Nizamuddin. And from there, they got their act together. So it was just a great learning experience. And I think that's when I realized that somewhere communication strategy, whether it is for the internal customer or the external customer, is going to remain very important to what I continue to do. So those were some of the early learnings for me, Ashutosh.
Very interesting. So, tell me, when I was reading about you, you use a term called socio-preneurial approach. And, I've heard the word entrepreneur being used in multiple forms, but I've never heard socio-preneurial. So help me understand, what does this mean?
So, Ashutosh, of I think the last year and a half, I've been fairly active on Instagram.
Okay.
So up until early 2018, the strategy was enterprise business.
Correct.
And for enterprise business, you don't need to be on Instagram. LinkedIn is enough. Word of mouth is enough. Referrals are enough. But the moment you start thinking of going B2C, somewhere Instagram or some of these younger social medias play a role.
Correct.
And I increasingly came across this hashtag, which was either sociopreneur or was socialpreneur.
Mm-hmm.
And it stuck with me because I finally had a term for what I always envisioned and saw myself as.
Yeah.
So I think for me, it brings the best of both worlds, which means that you're very community centric. Your main motive is to make an impact, make a difference, be influential,
mm-hmm.
And create something positive, which takes on a life of its own bigger than you.
Sure.
But while you're doing all of that, you still have a profit motive. You still have a commercial motive. And if you're able to marry the two, then that's as much of a win-win as you can get without really already being philanthropic enough like a Bill Gates, right? So I thought, do you have to wait that long for self-actualization, or can you do it on the fly? And I think socialpreneurs just get the opportunity to do it on the fly. So very interestingly, Ashutosh, ever since, and it all comes together, I think, very nicely when it has to come together, right? So which meant that this whole socialpreneurial terminology came into my conscious being. And simultaneously, I got called by Kirori Mal College, and also they house the innovation cell for Delhi University, to do a talk on innovation for the larger good of the community.
Okay.
And when I walked in there, the people that I met were either socialpreneurs or were teaching entrepreneurship for social good, or was teaching innovation for social good. And that just appealed to me so much that I came back from that session and said, I need to do something about this a little bit more constructively, consciously. And we launched an initiative under one of the two companies that I've co-founded. And the initiative is called Coaching Credits.
Okay.
So Ashutosh, what we're doing with Coaching Credits essentially is that I'm saying that you and I are in this conversation here right now.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, hey, Viraj, there's a client of mine. I coach.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's value in you and him doing a session together.
Mm-hmm.
But guess what? He's in a complete bootstrapping mode right now. He cannot pay you for your hourly coaching rate. But, you know, if you're all right with it, write him a coaching credit for the 3 hours or the 4 hours that you spend with him.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever in life he can, either he'll barter those credits with you or pay you for it in cash.
That's very interesting.
And what I've been able to do, interestingly, is get keynote speakers, storytellers, coaches, trainers, and entrepreneurs who need them to come together and collaborate, which otherwise may not have been possible.
It's almost like writing out an IOU.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Right. Well said. Yes, it is an IOU, and which you're paying forward. If you get that return on investment someday, fantastic. If you don't, you're already, you know, hoping that that gets paid forward.
Wonderful. Okay.
So that's my outlet for being a socialpreneur, if you know, that makes sense.
So moving on, you know, you use a term called high impact storytelling. Talk to me about this and give me an example.
So a lot of the one-on-one executive coaching that I end up doing is not so much about strategy, or it's not even so much about how to grow 10x. And I'm speaking with some of the biggest leaders of Fortune 100 companies included. I think they reach out to me or are referred to me often a time for executive presence, stage presence. The first time they're going to do a TEDx talk, in two cases, the first TED talk,
right,
or going to the UN Assembly to pick up your first accolade and you have to give a acknowledgement speech.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the times when they reach out to me.
Right.
And I often at times say that, you know, you would do well with an anecdote, with a story, with something which is personal, which you truly feel, you really need. So I think I started talking about storytelling as a way of creating a culture, as a way of creating impact, a long time before it became popular to say so. But then I think I changed gears and started talking about high impact storytelling, because I very rarely see the two spectrums come together and become one. So you have great stories, or you have great storytellers. Very few times you see both the story and the teller come together in such harmony that it's organic, it's natural. And, you know, when that story gets told, both the narrator and the character kind of, you know, speak to you. And that for me is high impact storytelling. And I think there are quite a few people across the world who do a great job of it.
Mm-hmm.
In recent times, I think Ellen DeGeneres does a fabulous job. And not just on her shows, but I keep talking. I've spoken about this very often in my trainings, in my sessions. So if some of your audiences are people who've been in my sessions, they would know that I speak about this often, especially in the last 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
So she did her Netflix special last year.
Mm-hmm.
And that was her stand-up act for the first time in many, many years. And as you know, for many years, in her youth when she struggled, it was as a stand-up comedian.
Correct.
So it was homecoming in a way when it came all full circle and she got her Netflix special to go and she did the stand-up act. And she was fabulous. She was spot on. I mean, she delivered absolutely flawlessly. But what was spectacular was that after that 1 hour special, I had a new sensitivity towards the LGBT community. I came out having learned more. And when I kind of look back at that 1 hour, I realized a lot of it happened through just stories. And they were funny. They were funny in the most intelligent sort of way. She's just such an intelligent human being. And those stories were humorous. They made you laugh while you were at it. But at the end of that hour, you were transformed in a way. And for me, that is high impact storytelling, where when you're telling it, the person stays with you for the story of it. But once the story finishes, the impact of it, the message of it, the learning of it still stays on with you. And not just as a powder session or a perfume session that you smell good for the hour after the spray, but it stays on with you forever.
There's a strong feeling.
Absolutely.
So tell me one more question to you before I move to the next section. You're working with lots of Indians and I'm sure people outside as well. What are some of the skills that a lot of us lack at the workplace?
Ashutosh, I think the moment we say a lot of skills that we lack, that answer for me may get a little subjective. But one,
some of the skills, just an example.
One skill that I think we objectively lack, on an average, there are a few who don't, and the ones who don't stand differentiated immediately. But I think they stand differentiated immediately because majority of us lack that skill, is our ability to assert. I think whether it is in the form of saying no, or it is in the form of saying you got to believe me, or it's in the form of saying that I know what I'm talking about. It may not have a proven track record yet, but I'm not going to follow the herd. I'm going to cut a path of my own. To stand by what we believe in, even if it is against the grain, I think we don't see enough of that happening. And I think it's deeply ingrained in us culturally. We have been taught to respect authority blindly, whether it is at home with our parents. I don't remember if I ever got an opportunity at home while I was growing up to talk to my dad and say, hey, let's have an objective conversation here. Let's discuss this. There was no discussion with him. I mean, now we are friends and I'm really, you know, I'm very thankful for the fact that that relationship evolved. But up until I was maybe 18, 19, 20, the only thing that I could think of when I spoke with my dad was that you have to respect this man. You cannot speak your heart out to him.
Correct.
And then you carry that same demeanor or that same calibration also into school and college. Now it is changing. When I go for a parents teacher meeting at my son's school now, I know that the teacher is open to being at the receiving end as well.
Absolutely.
But when in my time could you go to school and as a parent give teacher feedback that you're not doing such a great job in the classroom?
Absolutely.
You know, you just have to blindly respect authority.
Yeah.
And then all of that snowballs and becomes this big giant, you know, thing that you take as baggage, you lug as baggage into the workplace. And boss has to be revered. Boss is not somebody that you can ever say, hey, listen, I have an idea better than yours. And I think in that whole process, because we are not assertive, also what we are not is diplomatic. So often a time when I say you got to assert more, people think I mean you got to be more aggressive without realizing that it's not, you know, two ends of the spectrum. It's not as if you either have to be completely submissive or you have to be aggressive. You've got to find the space in the middle and that's called assertive. So I think that's one skill which we all can do with learning more.
I agree. In fact, you know, just as you were talking, I was reminded of an interesting story. 15, 20 years ago, I was in Beijing with some American friends. And I asked them, what's the difference between an Indian businessman and a Chinese businessman? And he said that the difference is that it is very, very difficult to get a Chinese businessman to say yes. It's very difficult to get an Indian businessman to say no.
say no.
Everything is
so nicely put. So nicely put. Yeah.
So let's move on. Let's talk about New Age leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Again, when I was reading about you, you said that you have developed a model for New Age leadership. Tell me about this.
I think, Ashutosh, we are all learning on the fly. And I think even before the COVID hit, lockdown came along, 2020s were always slated to be different. And when I say different, I mean every decade has been different in the last few centuries. But in the world where we stop measuring rate of change and we are already measuring rate of change, yeah, whether it is Industry 4.0, whether it is Internet of Things, Industrial Internet of Things, even without COVID, we were headed for a time never seen before, largely led by tech. I mean, look at what we are doing. Even till a few years ago, to make somebody believe that this was possible without the Cisco big systems where you spend crores as a big corporate, that two people can talk like this, would have been tough to fathom. And here we are, right? So I think we're all learning on the fly. A lot of that crystallized intelligence has gone out of the window completely. It has very little space. I could be 44, you could be 65, and we are all that much more in the learner mode for that much longer than ever before.
Absolutely.
So this model of mine also accordingly is still evolving. For me to say, hey, listen, this is the blueprint of what it takes to be a new age leader, and just follow it and you're relevant for the 2020s may not be the right thing to say.
Mm-hmm.
But the very fact that it opens you to the idea that you've got to stay in learner mode for a long time and that there will be no blueprint, there will be no capsule that you can consume and you're suddenly relevant, that by itself is one of the biggest learnings that comes across in this four-quadrant model.
Mm-hmm.
I think what it does for a leader is it leaves you with no choice but to start with self, because that's really the first quadrant. So the four quadrants, it'll take you to your team, it'll take you to your organization, it'll take you to your market. Those are the other three quadrants. But the first one is self. And it starts with basics like discipline and what it means in the new world to be disciplined, whether it is timekeeping hacks or it is being able to get more out of your 12 hours, which is no rocket science anymore. There's just so much tech available that today, if you cannot juice out your 12 hours, then you never intended to, you know. So it's all so much more in your hands today. But because it is all so much more in your hands today, a lot of what I talk about in the first quadrant is utilizing all of these boons that are made available to us more consciously.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it is great talent that we have access to today, whether it is opportunities to collaborate seamlessly across borders that we have today, or for that matter, the tech that we have at our fingertips today, that you know how judiciously we have to consciously start balancing it is also going to make a big difference, because it's very easy today to kind of let this drug take over completely and rule your life.
Correct.
So in a nutshell, that's what it is. It's a model which kind of opens you up to the idea that you can do plenty more to be relevant in the current times. But at the same time, there's a lot of old world wisdom which probably rings truer today than ever before. So, you know, how do you kind of get that balance going?
No, and whether it's old world or it's very old world, I mean, I'm sure if you talk of your grandmother and your great grandmother, things they said which are true even today.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. Too much of anything is bad probably holds true today more than ever before.
Absolutely right. So, Viraj, I'm going to move to some personal questions for you.
Sure.
I've got time for three or four questions for you personally. My first question to you would be that where do you draw your inspiration from?
I read a lot. I read voraciously. And while I was academically never bright in the classroom, I did not read too much into my NCERT textbooks.
Mm.
But back in school and even through college, I read fiction voraciously. Mm. I read Arthur C. Clarke on one hand, Sidney Sheldon on the other, and a lot of pop fiction. But at the same time, you know, The Dark Arena, The Godfather, the Robin Cooks, the John Grishams.
Sure.
You know, so I consume genres as wide as possible. And I think my first set of stories, imagination, ability to kind of create a picture in your head which does not exist. All of that was very strong. So the first time I debated conceptually, what I brought to the table as examples did not come from the real world, it came from the fictional world, but was still very strong. And then, of course, like I said, a perfect relation when I changed gears, I went into autobiographies, I went into journalistic pieces. I understood why Noam Chomsky means so much to the world and what he brings to the table, or for that matter, why it is important for everybody to read the Toyota story, or why it is important for everybody to understand what happened in the world of Ford. And then that whole piece took over so much that in the next... And perfect relation, the good thing was that I was heading a division or a department which was called India Media Monitor, where what you had to do was read about 17 or 18 different newspapers every day.
Okay.
Every morning.
Wonderful.
So that shorthand way of reading, scanning, your ability, your skill to scan, I was just so strong that I was consuming constantly. But I think I draw my inspiration from everything that I read, whether it is what's happening in one part of the world, or it is what one leader is doing, what one company has been able to achieve, or what one king was able to do, or what one queen was able to do. And it comes from history, it comes from Akbar, it comes from Ellen DeGeneres, it just comes from... Right. There's just so much that has been happening in the world. I hear that how you plug in.
So my next question to you is that, if you were a role model to billions of children who closely followed your life choices, what would be the one thing you would change in yourself?
Procrastination. Mm-hmm. Yes, you've got to be able to find a pace and a rhythm. And that pace and rhythm should not be in comparison or juxtaposed against the rest of the world or other people or peers. It has to be your own. But I think that if I in hindsight see, I could see that there were these phases where I took more time knowingly than I should have.
Correct.
If I was doing it unknowingly, I could have written off as seeing that the vision was not large enough, or exposure wasn't large enough, maturity wasn't large enough. But I knew that I'm taking more time than I should.
Correct.
For example, and I'm not proud of it, but I think I smoked as a chain smoker for way longer than I should have.
I see.
I cold turkeyed about 6 months ago, and I know that I should have done that much sooner, but I procrastinated. Mm-hmm. I should have gotten on to the running habit much sooner, gotten on to waking up earlier in the morning habit much sooner. But I think I rebelled against everything that I was not allowed to do for way longer than I should have. So that procrastination habit, I think I would probably give that up sooner than I've been able to.
Terrific. Given the current pandemic, how are you changing or rethinking your own life and your business?
I think that's the very first thing that I'm actually doing, Ashutosh. I'm taking that out in my coaching sessions too. Yeah, it really is. I mean, we know that it's universal truths, but it's the here and now, right? And we are spending very little time in the here and now. We're often trying to think two steps ahead, or we are two steps behind, either in the past or in the future. So that present, the mindful present, I think we spend very little time here. And the pandemic has actually woken me up to that reality. So I was down with COVID. I was COVID positive in June. And I think I spent a better part of June in solo quarantine, and that SQ, hashtag SQ as the world calls it these days, gave me a lot of time to do introspection. And one large part of it turned out that, hey Viraj, there are goals, but how many of those goals will really be relevant if you were to drop dead tomorrow?
Correct.
So which goals do you want to prioritize and fulfill first? And I really did write down my goals again. Often a time people say them, do it such that what if today was the last day, or what if tomorrow was the last day? But I think if there is one thing that has happened to a lot of us during this pandemic, is that we've realized that can be a very freak reality literally today. So we may as well take it seriously. So that's what I've done. I've rewritten my goals, not just for myself, but also for the company. So the coaching credits that I was talking about, for example, we had kept it optional for all our coaches so far. But the new contract that we've made at Open Brackets is that if you're signing up with Open Brackets as a coach, then 20% of all your time with us has to be coaching credits. Wonderful. We're not leaving that as an option. We're not saying that once we are big enough to do that, we'll do it. We're saying that we are doing it now. Because there may not be a tomorrow, you know. But at the same time, while we are probably changing gears and getting a little more aggressive about our goals at the workplace, we also simultaneously, both my partners and I sat down over a Zoom call. I haven't met both of them in person for a while now. But we sat down on a Zoom call like this, but instead of coffees, we had our beers in our hands. And, you know, we said that we probably, all of us are spending that much more time at home and we are happier for that. My son is already 11 and I know that I missed a large part of him reaching 11. I don't want to do that between his 11 and 22. So I think at both work and home, there's been a change in gears. And a lot of the changing in gears is centered on the fact that it's the here and now.
Excellent. Viraj, thank you very much. It's such a pleasure to you.
Pleasure's all mine, Ashutosh. It's been fantastic. Thank you so much for the opportunity, Ashutosh. It's been a pleasure chatting up with you.
Thank you again.
Thank you for listening to the brand called You Videocast and Podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for the brand called You.